in or opt out, whatever you want to call it, that the presumption should be online voting next time, but we have to give everybody notice, you know, and in some reasonable way. And when you think of the fact that, I don't know, 10% of the people vote, and probably less than that, I'm not sure, Brian, 10% contribute, our listener supporters. So that means that, you know, roughly 90% of the members are people we don't have regular contact with. So there'll have to be some way to let them know what's going on. And just the last point is, speaking for the senior citizen listener members, some of us have actually learned how to use computers.
No doubt.
Okay, Chandra.
I promise this is my last question. But the last report I saw from the local election supervisor was 49 out of 100, whatever, number of programs have not aired any election material. So they're out of compliance. And what's happening? Is there any sanctions going on? Is anybody addressing it? And et cetera. Does anybody here know?
Yeah. I mean, the PNB is aware that some of the requirements of the election coverage motion are not being met at all of the stations. KBFA's particular issue is with the collection tutorials not having happened on a number of programs. They've got problems with cart rotation at KPFK. They've got other kinds of problems at BAI. I mean, to some degree, these kinds of things get dealt with by the NES. I mean, that's why we have one. I do not believe at this point at KPFA they are considering sanctioning for any of this, but I think there is an effort to get in touch with programmers and find out what they, you know, what they need and what they want in order to get this done. So I think that's kind of the point that we're at with that. Other than that, you would have to talk to Oriana. I don't have anything else to report.
Okay, thank you, Tracy and Sharam. KFCF report, Rich is not here. GM report, the GM's not here. Are there any LSB committees that need to give reports?
Yes, I'm going to develop my report on the spot, and I'll be very fast because there are lots of things I can't say. So we met this week and interviewed the 11 people that had been selected for the first round of interviews. We are now down to 6 applicants left for the job. One withdrew because of job offers and other job things, and 4 we eliminated. And we have scheduled 2 dates 2 weeks from now for our second round of telephone interviews. And next week, the committee will be meeting to finalize our questions for the second round. Or to add, to change, to whatever, yes, our second round of questions. Okay.
So I'll just chime in if I can. First, that Sasha has been very effective at cracking the whip and keeping the process moving forward in a timely fashion. Those of you who know Sasha know that whip cracking is one of the things she's good at. And I just wanted, because people have been asking me, and obviously there's not much we can say, I will say, as someone who's been through 2 rounds of search on GM hire committees in the past, it is the strongest pool we've gotten. I think we can thank the recession for that. We can also thank the fact that Pacifica has been doing a nationwide posting and search.
We've had really terrible pools.
We've had very terrible pools. But I think everybody who is in our pool at this point has at least some background in non-commercial radio, in addition to whatever other qualifications they have, which was never really the case before at this point in the process. So that's it's encouraging, and the committee's working well together.
Just a 30-second comment, if I may. I think in retrospect it was a prudent decision to postpone or rather extend the deadline for having more applicants or more applications come in, because by the time we reached the first deadline, we didn't have a sufficient number of qualified applicants.
Okay, I don't know if any other LSB committees have reports to give. Apparently not. PNB committees, item 14. Okay, Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, I basically summarized what the Finance and Elections Committee have been doing. Finance has been doing what I said. Elections Committee has basically been dealing with questions of extensions and internet voting and opts and ins, and opt-ins and opt-outs. The coordinating committee report is that the next PNB meeting will be at the Beekman Tower Hotel in New York, 49th and 1st, September 30th to October 2nd. And is there anything from programming technology?
I wasn't able to be on the call for it because I was away, so I don't know. I have to get an update. And I didn't get anything through mail. Did you, Sasha? You were in the programming. And Harry is on the program. Oh, Henry is not.
Okay. Okay. So unless any LSB members have something they'd like to report from audit, governance, personnel, or any of the committees that the two of us are not on, we would need to stop right there.
Are you on government? That's Chandra?
Just one quick comment from the audit committee. The auditor has been pushing all year for us to ensure that all five stations are on the same page in terms of the same budget reporting, collection, and budget numbers collection and reporting system, and it still hasn't happened yet, and it's going to be very hard for him to prepare the next 990 without this occurring, and also it's very hard to make budget projections and planning for the whole network. So we're still struggling with that.
Okay, Brian.
The issue of payments being in arrears to the auditor came up earlier. Will we have an auditor for this fiscal year?
The auditor, who seems to be an official nice guy, Tony Pohl with Helen Donovan, has made a statement that regardless of the slowness of the payments, that he is willing to perform the audit next year and will proceed to do so if the board wishes him to. The board did decide that they wished him to in Berkeley. He's been our auditor now for, this will be the second year. This will be the third year, and I think the idea was to try to switch up auditors about every 5 years. So he's, you know, well within the term that we had hoped to work with him. So the answer is yes, he'll be back despite the large debt.
The question was, because $100,000 owed, I'm guessing that's not the full amount he worked, but maybe it is, sounds like quite a lot of money to me. I was wondering how it compared to prior auditors.
I can research it and get back to you. I don't know. I wasn't on the PNB when we used any other auditor, so I didn't really have access to the figures, but I can try to find out.
Okay, now we come to old business, of which first item is the Program Council. Tracy?
I would like to offer a substitute amendment to the, I mean a substitute motion to the one that was presented in July. I've written it out, and I'll go ahead and pass it out. I presume that someone might want to read it prior to seconding it, but I hope someone will second it. I'll pass it out now. It is a shortening of the previous motion. Okay. Just to be clear, because I knew that I wasn't going to have enough time to send this out earlier, the substitute motion is the first page. The second page is the one that you saw in July. The differences are not incredible. There's some superfluous text cut. Otherwise, the substitute motion states that the program director is the chair and facilitator of the program council, if there is in fact a program director. What else does it change? It also points to confidentiality procedures, which I think are appropriate when evaluating programs and programmers. Those are the major changes, but if you want to do it word for word, you have the new text of the substitute and the old one attached. Okay, to be clear, in the first section that begins whereas, I eliminated item D, and that was a question of superfluous text. Please don't take offense. Don't take offense at that. I didn't mean superfluous like unimportant, just as in getting shorter. Yeah. After the therefore, I got rid of the words now defunct in item A. In item C, I did not address the KFCF. My thought was that program councils generally meet once a week or twice a month, and that it was unlikely someone from Fresno would drive up to Berkeley several times a month. What else is different? I compacted the dispute resolution proposal a bit. It's now two bullet points instead of four. And I think that's pretty much it, except that the program director would be the facilitator chair of the program council, which I mentioned before. As I think the program director should be.
Take the mic, Brian, please.
Quorum rules, I don't believe they're mentioned in Henry's motion, but as I understand it, the quorum rule of the old program council was that there had to be at least one person from each constituency present.
It was mentioned in Henry's proposal under item 2nd D under therefore, and it's carried over into the
You're correct.
Motion. It's just in a different
gotcha.
Place.
Missed it.
Chandra?
If this is approved today, what happens to all the programming changes that have just taken effect and those that happened a few months ago?
I don't think anything happens to them.
Because some of them haven't actually taken effect yet. They have been announced, but they haven't taken effect.
I think things that haven't taken effect could potentially be discussed by a program council. Things that have taken effect have taken effect.
Brian.
Sorry, Henry. You got to work out.
We need the 6 slides.
I have reservations I'll express later, but I'm kind of curious. The last time the local station board passed a motion, it had what I thought were prudent limits on the scope of the program council's authority, that the program council could not act to contradict a personnel action by the general manager. In other words, if management yanks someone off the air for the FCC violation, the program council say, hey, we want to put you back on. Because it would create a somewhat anarchic situation at the station, that the program council couldn't trump the general manager on issues where there would be a serious financial impact. In other words, the general manager might have to step in and say, actually, no, this program raises a whole lot of money. You can't take it off the air. We're going to have to lay people off. And I don't actually remember the other two. I believe there were four.
Jeopardizing the license.
And
personnel issue, finances, and
those three.
So your thoughts on how those situations fit into this proposal?
Well, I'll tell you what my thinking was, and perhaps, I don't know whether Tracy shares this or not, but my idea was to, I think those limits that you're talking about were in the form of grounds. The resolution listed specific grounds on which the manager could reject the recommendations of the program council. And I thought it made sense to leave it open-ended, that it would actually give more power to the to management, to leave it open-ended, because there could be other grounds that I think you know, are legitimate, where even if a recommendation didn't, you know, jeopardize the license or whatever, undermine the financial status or all that stuff, those specific things, but in the eyes of the management, I actually thought it was a really terrible idea. So my intent was actually to give more power to management, not less, by not constraining them to only specific criteria for rejecting a motion.
I mean, I have no idea, you know, how much this iteration of the program council would use the sort of policies and handbook that are already pre-existing from the previous one. I would hope that they would, but of course that'll be up to them. But I would say that those particular criteria are in that policy and handbook, and sort of, you know, there's like a standard operating procedures manual for the PC, and they are enshrined in there. And I think it certainly is something that would be used as a, you know, as an operational criteria, probably inside, to say here's the places where overriding makes sense, and it is indeed the responsibility of the PD not to move forward. So I would just add, I don't think this motion in any way is meant to preempt that. As Henry said, I think it's just to give a little bit more space.
Okay, Dan is next.
So I guess procedurally what I would like to do is make a motion to amend the motion by eliminating subparagraph F. And let me motivate that for a second. You know, maybe contrary to some people, I think the idea of having a program council is a good thing. And I think that it's one of the ways in which the community should have input into what goes out over the air, and hopefully that will help improve our programming and help build our audience. But I think that we should really reject the idea that the LSB has the right, responsibility, or expertise to become involved in day-to-day management of the station. And this seems, paragraph F seems like a backdoor way to do something that we don't and can't do anyway. I mean, it's clear from our bylaws that the executive director, the station managers, and the program managers, with oversight from us, are responsible for running the station. And that it's our job as an LSB to give input, to approve the budget, to make personnel decisions, and so on. And that having a program council that we work with, I think, contributes to that. But if the program council, for whatever reason, says, well, you know, time to get rid of democracy now, and then the station manager says no, and then it comes back to us, and we're supposed to have a debate about whether to overrule the station management. I mean, it's just not our job. It's contrary to the bylaws. I think it's illegal. And I just think, and I'm not saying this is anybody's intent, but the impact of passing and implementing that kind of motion is just mischief-making. I mean, it just, you know, creates an environment where the station management is looking over its shoulder all the time, and we are tempted to interfere in their business. So I would be ready to vote for the program council plan without subparagraph F.
Brian?
Just on the intent of Dan's motion, if it's to eliminate the program council's authority to make changes, would you be eliminating F through H?
I may be confused. I thought that the newest resolution was the one on top, that's the one that Tracy was presenting.
Am I right, Tracy?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's after.
Isn't this the Tracy version?
The new resolution.
Oh, the old version's appended to your version.
Yeah, I wanted you to be able to see the change.
That covers some of my confusion.
Okay, Sasha.
If I may sort of in my own feelings address what you just said, Dan, I mean, I agree that I don't think we want the LSB to be entering into every decision that has to do with a potential programming change. I think that's just there. If there is a disagreement basically between station manager and program council, that there is a court of appeals, as it were, which would be the LSB on a specific issue, which is very, you know, so I don't see this as entering into daily operations. I don't see this as necessarily even being an involvement other than maybe if it even happened once a year on something. I don't see us as making a whole lot of programming changes. We never do, and this, the whole process is kind of slow moving. It's not like one person, you know, it's not, there's not a program director who says, get this off the air, put that on. I don't think this person is doing a good job. They're fired. I'm replacing them. We don't operate that way. So everything's very slow moving. And so I just don't even see that coming into play very often. And I personally think that the LSB, we are a radio station, and the most important thing we do is radio programming, and I have no problem with our having a little bit of say in that. If all other parties who are working there Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, you know, to put it that way loosely, I realize we're on the air 24 hours, can't come to agreement with one another.
Okay, Brian?
So I just have a couple more questions before I wade into the debate. I hope that's okay with you.
To Tracy?
To the makers of the motion. So I don't know if that... It sounds like that's maybe Tracy and Henry. So my question since... Well, actually two questions. I saw that at the last meeting, which I was not at... we passed something asking the LSB's new program committee to come up with a proposal for how these decisions are made. And my first question would be, are we preempting that process by creating a proposal of our own? And my second question is about, you know, since it's up for discussion again, the makeup of the program council. I've never understood why the LSB would appoint other people to represent the community when presumably we've gone to some expense to let our listeners choose who represents them on this board. So I don't quite understand the function of the non-LSB community reps, and I'm curious because the one constituency that seems to be missing in this model is the paid programmers at the station. There is no representation for someone like me on that program council.
I'll let Tracy answer the latter part of it. But I'm sorry. But I'm sorry. You know, I'm on the PMB program committee, and then, you know, I attended or listened to a reasonable amount of the PMB meeting in Berkeley, and one of the things that kept coming up I was very fascinated by is that all the stations throughout the system always mention KPFA's program council as a model. It was a reoccurring topic, and they thought it still existed. They did not understand that it had been made moot a couple of years ago, but they were looking at it in terms of in its heyday. And it did have a heyday when it functioned quite well and made programming changes for several years, and as a model. And so I think in terms of anything that the programming council would come up to recommend would actually be based on what we're doing anyway. And then you had another point. I'm sorry.
Paid staff.
Oh, community reps. Oh, okay. Sure.
I also had some questions about the composition, but I actually drafting the original version that Tracy then revised, I, in consultation with the rest of the programming committee, I actually leaned to be conservative. In fact, this body passed a resolution in 2004 that created this mechanism, or didn't create it, reaffirmed it in the era of the LSB by endorsing the documents that had previously been drafted by the program council before there was an LSB. And since there seemed to me to be a general consensus, or at least a very wide feeling, that the program council in that period had functioned fairly well for several years, and I thought it might be less controversial. I guess I was wrong, but the assumption was that it might be less controversial to stick with the formula that existed previously, and that the station, many people at the station had experience with, than to go, creating a whole new composition for the board.
I've been a bit remiss here. Actually, the item on the floor is Dan's proposed amendment to the substitute motion, so we should confine discussion to that until it's resolved. Brian?
I actually want to echo what Dan said. I think the idea of a program council, and actually we've heard during our interviews with general manager candidates from people who've worked with them at other stations, the idea of a program council as kind of a broadly representative group of stakeholders that can build consensus around programming changes, to me, is a good one. I think the reality of the station we're in is that even if a manager is trying to unilaterally make a change that will be very good for the station, unless there's a very thorough discussion and process of bringing people on board, the implementation of that decision will cause no end of controversy and may even trigger the failure of the decision itself. I'm leery, so that's the good, I see. I'm leery of program council becoming a political football where people decide that a pressure campaign is the best way to get a show on the air because the program council is a political body and where the group is large enough to factionalize and people take account of who's in the room and slam through a programming change by a slim majority because they happen to have the most votes that day. And I actually think our program council at different points in its history, from what I understand of it, and I've never been on it.
Brian, can you stick to Dan's amendment?
Well, I'm making the case for Dan's amendment, which I believe is to I think the program council is less of a political football if the LSB is not playing court of appeals on its decision, and if it is ultimately subject to the final say of the station management. I think management reports to us. This board evaluates them and fires them and hires them. And we can evaluate a manager based on how collegially we think they're working with the program council. I think it would make us a more rancorous group than we already are if we were acting as a court of appeals on programming decisions and not making specific decisions about what does and does not go on the air. I think it would distract us from setting strategic direction for the station. And I think, and this is the important thing, I think when the program council is working well and is representative and is approaching a consensus on its decisions, as a broadly representative stakeholder group, it has a tremendous amount of moral authority, which carries quite a bit of weight in the station. I think we shouldn't try to replace that with formal authority, which could lead to a program council or a slim majority on the program council slamming through station changes that haven't been through that kind of consensus process and getting back up from the LSB for political reasons. We can all obviously see why it would be very awkward for the LSB to be arbitrating a decision about whether or not to take one of its own members off the air. particularly if that member were on the outs with the majority of the local station board. I think it'd be bad for the image of the local station board and bad for the operation of the station. I'm sorry, it's a very long way of saying I do support the amendment.
Okay, further discussion of the amendment. Pamela.
I agree with Dan's amendment and what Brian said, and I heard what Sasha said. But that logic seems incomplete to me. To say that it will only happen once in a while and it will be cumbersome and take time is not to say that it should happen, that the LSB should be able to just move programs or eliminate programs or have to say who gets to appear on programs. I mean, I stand by what I said last time. I won't repeat it.
Okay, Henry?
You know, again, I want to repeat, we actually have some history here, and I don't think this mechanism ever was used before, was it? Was it ever? About the Democracy Now! Scheduling thing? Right. Okay. But that was, in that case, the LSB was actually, okay. I guess, yeah, that is an example. But that is that's a counterexample that in the sense of that wasn't a question of the LSB slamming through something. That was a question of the LSB affirming something that had a wide consensus among most of the stakeholders and was being obstructed by some of the stakeholders. I would say, you know, the more generally here, the reason why I think it's important to have a mechanism like this is that I was on the program council, not immediately before it faded away, but shortly before. I guess it was the end of 2008 or seven. Seven. And the problem then was that basically the program director at that time didn't want the program council to have any real function except to fill out surveys. That's what she said. I think this station needs to give its, I hate this phrase, the stakeholders, its community and, its community, its listeners, more meaningful participation than the model that was being proposed to us. And I don't know how we do that except by establishing procedures and communicating to both current and, I guess we don't have any current management, so potential to managers to be hired, that we actually mean for this body to have some real weight. And that they have they as managers will certainly have authority. But part of the way they have to exercise their authority is by leading the program council, by building consensus on the program council, which is a short way of saying by building consensus among, you know, representatives of the broader KPFA community. I'm afraid that if we strike this section, we're going to be leaving it we're going to be creating this structure, but leaving it in a form that management is entirely free to ignore. And I don't think that, based on the history, I don't think that is a model that is going to work.
Okay, are we ready to vote on this item?
Call question on, I guess it's Dan's amendment. Did that get a second? Dan's amendment?
Brian's yeah, sure.
Can we call the question?
Can you read the amendment?
Dan's amendment is to strike part F of the amended motion.
Just F. Okay, geez. Part of the job. No, he was looking at the. Oh, okay.
Okay, then. Does everyone understand the question? Okay, on the question of Dan's amendment to Tracy's substitute motion, all in favor, please raise your hands. Five yes, opposed. Seven, no. One, two, three. Seven, no. The motion is defeated. Brian? The amendment is defeated.
I'd like to... No, we're back to the substitute motion. It's getting late. I'd like to propose a separate amendment to the substitute motion. And this would be to strike the three community representatives appointed by the LSB. Community representatives appointed by the LSB, and to add one representative elected by KPFA's union staff. And if I may get a second, I'll motivate it.
Second.
Objection. Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
I just want to say...
Tracy, what was your objection?
We can deal with that later.
Okay.
I just want to address, since we're discussing it, three holes in the makeup of the program council. I think 15 people is a little bit too large to be a cozy discussion. And the program council we had before it went defunct was not the result of any kind of unified plan. Just different representatives from different constituencies got added over the years. With no one ever saying, well, what's an ideal size for the program council? So this would take it down a couple. The second concern I have is about our workflow as a body. You'll recall that we seem to spend the first 6 months of our year doing nothing but appointing people to various bodies. We elect our officers, we appoint our committee members, we elect people to the PNB, we appoint people to the PNB committees. God willing, we get people on the CAB, which took until July of this year. Adding a search and appointment process for the program council seems like it would have us be nothing but a committee referee as a body. I also think from a who's representative point of view, the listener representatives who sit on this board were actually elected by our listeners. People this board appoints, who do they represent? They represent the majority of the board. As far as having paid staff representation, I do feel quite strongly that this is supposed to be a stakeholder group. Those of us who are paid programmers at KPFA, in our time slots, we account for 60% of the raising, 70% of the fundraising during our fund drives, and more in the time slots that fall outside of our fund drives, out of our time. More in preemptions that fall outside our time slots. I'm sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied. I think that's an important perspective to have at the table, and if you want it to be broadly representative, you shouldn't leave us out of the conversation. And having department heads in there is not the same as having programmers in there.
Okay, other comments? Sharam?
Actually, I think things could be easier in terms of the community representatives. I don't know if there's any conflict between having CAB members on program council. I mean, there's a conflict. Okay, so I don't know, the CAB selection of the CAB members was fairly easy, and this one may be a little more difficult, but I think all of us can reach out to people and there would be some sort of an SDV or system to have people appointed. I don't anticipate that's being an overburden on this board. On the question of paid staff, as I'm looking at this thing, there are already four staff, paid staff members. Well, actually, this is what I, because they're all union members, right, Brian? They're all. No, paid staff. The department heads are, I mean, we have had this discussion all the time, right? Every time we want to talk about whether they're managers or not, we hear this argument that they're not managers, they're paid staff, right? So I think actually one thing we can do, I can think of a modification to this language, and paid staff could, I mean, other paid staff, all these people actually at this point, they're all programmers. And historically it has been the case. They have their own programs, or they're on air, or they're producing, they're hosting, so forth and so on. You could add a modification saying that, and it should be, actually has been done as a practice before. I don't know if we need it. Then these department heads can actually appoint or designate one of the people who work in that department as being the representatives. And historically that has been done. I have seen it. I don't know if we need to add it here. So I'm thinking that there should be some sort of balance between paid and unpaid staff. There are four unpaid staff members here, and there are four paid staff members. So I think it's fair, I mean, in terms of having representation. Well, yeah, in terms of numbers, but anyhow, so that's my two cents in terms of having the, sort of equity or fairness for the paid staff.
Okay, Tracy, Brian, Chandra.
Yeah, in terms of the community reps, it's not in the motion, which means that it would be certainly up to the board. I would certainly recommend that you elect community reps for a substantial period of time. It used to be done for 2 years. I think it might even be better to try it for 3-year terms, but there's no obligation to do it every single year. Otherwise, I think Shara made the points that I wanted to make.
Hey, Brian.
Well, I do want to point out one thing. The motion mentions a public affairs director. That position no longer exists at KPFA. Yeah. Well, I guess here's what I'm saying. Every other constituency on this program council elects its representatives. And what you're saying is the people who speak for the paid staff are either fixed by this motion or appointed by the people fixed by this motion. And it seems to be a bit of a double standard so far as democracy is concerned. I don't understand why I should be the only person at this table who's not eligible to run for the program council.
Okay, Chandra.
The way I count it up, it's pretty much an even split because the LSB members and the community reps would be elected by STV. That means the majority constituency on the LSB would get two of each, and the minority constituency would get one of each. So each side would have representatives. So I think that's one point that's important to make. In terms of the election of a paid staff representative, I think that the directors of the departments, in essence, are paid staff, and they do have a constituency, and it is consistent with the paid staff non-manager staff at the station. So I don't see a problem. I don't see a conflict why there has to be a separate election for a paid staff rep. So I would like to see...
My boss is my representative.
But Brian, please, let her speak, please.
And I would like to see something here that specifies the term, because there's no term. And are we just going to... I would like to see a term, and not have to do it every year. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
Cheryl?
Yeah. So let me make sure if I understand this, Brian. If I make an amendment, say that these four departments are non-voting members, and then we have four programmers as voting members, paid programmers, would you support that as a second? Would you second that?
No, I think 19 people is too many to have in the room.
Well, for a discussion, for voting, there are 15. Well, we used to have 17, 18 people in the program council. So it's not one more body there. I don't think it's going to be.
Anybody that's worked with groups knows that 12 is your max.
Well, we used to have 17, 18 people in the program councils before. I mean, I've seen it. Yeah. No, I've seen, you know, I've seen it up to 17, 18 with the program director.
Okay. Is there further discussion on Brian's motion?
Mr. Chair, I think I've actually muddled issues by combining adding a union representative with subtracting the three community representatives. If it's okay with the body, I'd ask that they be voted separately. Is it motion to divide?
Have any objection? Brian wants to divide his motion into two elements. One striking the community reps. One adding the union rep. Okay.
Point of order. Mm-hmm. Some of our members had to leave, and we no longer have a quorum.
We had a quorum to start the meeting. But for something to pass, it will still need the number of votes it would have had there been a quorum.
The way that it works is if you have quorum at the beginning of the meeting, you have quorum for the entire meeting as long as any motion that passes has the number of affirmative votes that equals the number of people present at the beginning of the meeting plus one. Half plus one, yeah. Half of quorum plus one. Half of quorum. No, half of technically what quorum is. So at seven affirmative votes, we are fine.
Okay, shall we go to a vote on which item would you like voted on first, Brian? Okay. Brian's proposed amendment would have a union representative other than the department head added.
A representative elected by the station's union members.
Elected by the union members.
Before we vote, is this talking about that split where there's a separate vote?
That's right. Brian asked that his motion be divided because there's two separate issues. So we'll vote on the first one now. You can propose. Yours amends. There was no objection to your motion to divide, so we are. So now the issue is your.
It's a procedural question. The question is how many.
Yes. I believe that we need to vote on Brian's divided amendment, and then further amendments can be entertained once that one is disposed of. Yes.
Okay. I'm proposing that the four voting members would be union staff, and these four department heads would be non-voting members. That's what I'm proposing.
We're voting on Brian's other item first, so that's not germane at this moment.
Yeah, it can be introduced as an amendment once we dispose of or deal with Brian's amendment.
Okay, can we go to a vote on Brian's amendment that would add a union member selected by the union membership? Does everyone understand that motion? Okay. All in favor, please raise your hands.
I'd like to ask for a roll call.
Okay. Mr. Secretary, please call the roll.
We make a 16-member committee that would never be able to have a majority
vote. Well, he had that fixed.
In favor of Brian's amendment.
Yes.
Yes.
Sasha?
No.
Shonda?
No.
Henry?
No.
Tracy?
No.
Shabam?
No.
Najee?
No.
Yes.
Anthony? Chair doesn't vote except for a tie.
I vote yes.
Oh, John.
Okay, the motion fails. We go now to Brian's other amendment. Okay. Brian withdrew the motion you proposed to amend. Okay, you're next.
Okay, I'm amending. It would change the status of department heads to non-voting, and it would add four union staff as voting members. Union staff will decide how they want to elect their own.
They vote on it, right? Okay.
Okay.
Can we let Anthony chair instead of Tracy?
Tracy, you evidently want to comment.
I want to say, please. I would like you to explain this. I would like you to explain this because my first gut instinct is, A, it makes things too big. No, I got called on, and B, that I don't know why I would want department heads to be non-voting. I'm not seeing that.
Well, I mean, there seems to be a concern about the voice of paid programmers not being echoed in this body. So I think that would be and department heads could be part involved in the decision-making in the sense that they can actually lead the discussion. But I think if there's a concern about the paid staff not being involved here, this would be a good motion to bring them in. Paid programmer. I'm hoping that one of the people who were supporting the participation of union staff to second my motion.
Was there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Okay, Sasha, you are next.
Well, I think that we select people as managers of departments, assuming they know something about the area in which they are managing. So we have training, music, news, and public affairs. And I understand there's no public affairs director at the moment. It could be reinstated with more money, right?
But it's not there now.
Okay. So whatever we would do with public affairs, I mean, clearly I want to cover public affairs because that's an important thing that we do. So if there's no public affairs manager, we need to change the language so that there's somebody from the public affairs department. But I think I want the managers there. And it happens that all of the people who are managers, as I understand it, all have a program on the air in these areas. So there actually are also paid programmers, and I understand that might not be the case in 3 years or next month or, you know, maybe it'll be forever. It seems that it is. I mean, I know the news heads of the news department have been on the air for, you know, several decades. I mean, a lot of these people have been around for several decades, both as a manager and on the air. So I don't find any, and they're members of the union and they're paid staff. So I think they're represented. If there's some language that you'd like to suggest to make sure that's the case, so if it were to change that we had so much money, we had managers who didn't have programs, we had all these paid programmers as well in these areas, that would be fine with me. But I don't see us adding to paid staff but taking away from them in terms of our budgeting issues. But, you know, I think this is covered. And there might be language that the managers, you know, within the departments, they could have a vote to who would represent them other than the manager.
So should I state the motion again or more discussion?
More discussion.
Brian, Chandra, John.
So, Sriram, to answer your question, I like what I think you're trying to do, but I share all of Tracy's concerns about the effects of the execution. And if you're sincere about trying to address that issue of representation and work it out in a way that doesn't make the committee unwieldy, I would suggest we refer this discussion to the programming committee, which is supposed to be reviewing our programming policies, which apparently Tracy doesn't like, so that won't go anywhere. That's okay. I saw you shaking your head. Maybe you're shaking your head at a text message. Okay. Anyway, I mean, that's my thought. If you're interested in pursuing that, let's commit it. Let's refer it to committee, rather, and work it out and not come up with something unwieldy here.
I'm actually sensing that there is not enough support for this motion. I'm going to withdraw.
Let me let the others.
Oh, okay.
Because I have a substitute amendment. So I just want to bring it out for discussion, and then if the body likes it, I don't know how that works in terms of we would have to vote his up and then vote mine.
I'm actually withdrawing my motion.
Okay, because I think this might work. My proposal is that the four departments, music, news, public affairs, and training, each elect their own representative. It could be the manager. Or it could be a paid, or it could be a non-manager, and I think that way you'd maybe cover both Brian's concerns and Sharam's. It's just a proposal now, and you know I wanted to see if people run it up the flagpole, so to speak.
Wait a minute. You don't have the floor, Brian. John was next, I think. Mm.
Or I could move it as a motion as an amendment since Sharam.
I think. Oh, okay. So now it moves into the place vacated by Sharam's. So it is in order.
Okay. So let me move it as an amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. John, did you have a comment?
Well, I'm not sure. My question is that I was beginning to think that I was hearing that when a bargaining unit employee becomes a manager, they are still in the bargaining unit?
That's
correct. Brian.
People who have the title department head at KPFN, which are essentially administrative positions, they don't have hiring or firing or disciplinary authority over paid programmers, are in the bargaining unit.
And that's called manager as well as department?
No, in the station, they're not called managers. People in this conversation are referring them to them as managers. But they're not managerial under the NLRB. They're part of the bargaining unit.
Okay.
If I can have the floor for more than that, I did want to respond to Chandra's proposal.
Okay.
But I don't want to mess up your flow.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I appreciate the spirit. I actually think it's very unwieldy to do department-by-department elections because you have to figure out who's in what department. No, I'm serious. Look, if you have someone, as we do, who is part of the Pushing Limits Collective and contributes to that show, they're in public affairs. But if they're also a volunteer reporter one day a week, they're in news. What's that? The paid staff in each department. Well, there are no paid staff in the music department, aside from the music director, who's half-time now.
Everybody else is on paid staff.
Yes.
we're getting out of order here. Yeah. Brian, did you have anything more?
Well, actually, can you confirm that's the intent of the motion, is to have the paid staff in each department elect someone?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, Tracy. It's
good question. Okay.
Chandra's amendment to Tracy's substitute motion, which now would paid staff and he would elect their program council rep by department. We don't have exact language for this, but are people okay with voting anyway?